The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests of this program do not necessarily reflect those of Power Media Group, its stations, management staff, or advertisers.
We all owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. In the 9 years I've been doing talk radio, there's two shows that I find to be the most difficult. The first is Memorial Day, and the second is our September 11th show. It will now be 20 years since that fateful day, September 11th, 2001, and we must never forget. Today we'll be talking with two people who personally witnessed the horrors of 2001, and will be, I think you'll find it very enlightening for their perspective on what happened that day and what's happening now and how things have changed. My first guest, very pleased to have him joining us all the way from Virginia, Staff Sergeant, United States Army retired, Matt Rosenberg, was assigned to the Pentagon 2 weeks before September 11th, 2001 or so. Is that pretty close, Matt?
More like, I think it was more like 6 months. It took me a while to get the, I was assigned to the position of mass casualty NCO about 2 weeks before the incident. Yes.
Okay. This is why I don't do math in public. Close enough. But Matthew Rosenberg, what an honor to have you on American Warrior Radio with us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Why, and as I've gotten to know you, Matt, you've had a very ADHD career, but interesting career. What convinced Matt Rosenberg to join the Army in the first place?
College. I really wanted money so I could go to school to pursue a career in law enforcement originally. And joining the military was the easiest way to get money for college. So that's what originally brought me in.
And at what point did you, I mean, you could have left, gotten your your degree and left and become a cop or something, but you decided to, and now you retired at the rank of staff sergeant, which I means you, I'm guessing it means you put in your full 20.
Yes, I was in for 22 years.
And what made you stay?
I absolutely wound up loving what I did. After 9/11, I had a brief period where I went into the reserves and immediately got mobilized to go to Iraq. And of the 5 years that I was technically in the reserves, I was mobilized or active for 3.5 of them. At that point, I had 13 years left. I had 13 years in service and made the decision to go back on active duty and never really looked back. I had one series after another of just wonderful experiences. Not easy, but very rewarding experiences.
Matt, part of the reason that we have American Warrior Radio is not only to communicate, to educate and communicate to that, to try and address that gap of understanding between those who served and those who never did. But also we're big believers in the power of storytelling. Now we're on radio, and so there's things that are tough to communicate without being very descriptive in one's words and language. And as you know, it's not my first language, so I'm going to count on your help here. But one thing I hope to achieve today is just to, and not to be harsh, but to really, as much as possible, communicate to our listeners out there what that day was like, and to a great extent, what those weeks following those days were like. And so that's why I'm so pleased to have you here, because it's sad. I try and get World War II and Korean era veterans on the show as much as possible, because if they don't tell their stories, we'll lose that forever. And, you know, in thinking about the 20th anniversary You know, particularly what's happening or what has happened to the firefighters and the first responders there in New York with the cancer and all those complications. This generation or those people who were there to personally witness it are also fading pretty fast. So I'm grateful to have you today, and I hope you'll be patient with us and sharing our story. So let's start off with what. So you were assigned the mass casualty officer at the Pentagon approximately 2 weeks before September 11th. What, for our civilian listeners, explain what that is and what your job would be.
So in the Pentagon, there is a health clinic called the DiLorenzo TRICARE Health Clinic. That clinic is the primary medical and dental clinic for the Pentagon. That clinic is responsible for the daily emergency operations as far as emergency services. We have teams that can deploy pretty much anywhere in the Pentagon within 5 minutes. The mass casualty portion of that refers to any incident that has the ability to overwhelm local resources. So the NCO's responsibility in that is to field the equipment, make sure that we have enough to handle the situations that are going on, and then to help add, from experience points, different key aspects in the development of the plan to facilitate the use of the equipment and policies and procedures to make sure that everything is done in a manner that brings the most resources to the most amount of people in the shortest amount of time.
So you're a history guy. To the best of my knowledge, there has never been a need before 9/11 for this sort of response at that, to that extent, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you're, Matt's there, you've got a new desk, a, you know, new pen, shiny new radio. What are you doing in just the days or those weeks prior to 9/11?
So the role of mass casualty NCO was a secondary duty for me. So my primary responsibility was to work as a medic in the minor surgery clinic at the Pentagon, and then to also work on the Pentagon's emergency response teams. When I had extra time from that, I was to go over the mass cal plan, check our inventories, and determine from those inventories where we needed more resources. So in the weeks before the attack, I was doing inventories and I was trying to order more equipment. But anyone who's worked in the federal government knows that September is absolutely the worst time to try to order things.
Yeah.
So I was told that, hey, don't worry about it. Just drop the, when the budget drops in October, resubmit these requests, no problem. So what I wound up doing was leaving the mass cal chests in places that were accessible so that I could find some extra supplies between our clinic and the Air Force clinic above us and kind of stockpile it that way.
And again, you know, talking to the civilians here, Matt, so that when you talk about the mass cal chests, those are sort of what, like first aid kits on steroids? I mean, that's what you would pick up and carry into a situation?
Roger. So imagine the first aid kit that you buy for your house, but it has extra splints, it has bandages, tourniquets for major injuries as a way to sustain major injuries until other help can arrive to get you to a facility where they can do the real work. So the mass cal kits are designed to, as the temporary life-saving measure, to provide us the ability to have overflow in the clinic to treat more casualties than we normally would be able to.
The, you've used the phrase, Matt, tabletop exercise, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Matthew Rosenberg. Matthew was a medic at the Pentagon on September 11th. In the weeks leading up to the attacks on the Pentagon, he was recruiting these response plans, one of which outlined the unlikely, and I use the quotation fingers, the unlikely event of an airplane hitting the Pentagon. Stick around. We'll be right back.
powerful talk.
I like to talk about one thing that may be difficult about deployments, breaking the news to kids.
Powerful talk.
So, what is stress? How does stress affect us?
Powerful talk.
I think it's really important for us to ensure that the whole story is told and understand, you know, everyone's place in that historical context.
Knowledge is power. Get yours on KPPF.
I didn't want to talk. She just sat with me. That was all I really needed.
We got back. One day he called me out of the blue. And it's comforting to know that I always can count on him to have my back.
She called me from time to time. I really didn't think I needed any help.
It took me from being really depressed to feeling like somebody cared to give me some hope. Just that one text.
Be there. Your call. Your presence. Your words. Your support. Be there and help save a life. Learn more about preventing suicide at veteranscrisisline.net.
Life is full of bittersweet transitions. It's difficult to know how these changes will impact us over time. For some people, difficult transitions like retirement, divorce, or loss of a loved one can hit harder than expected and may contribute to feelings of hopelessness or even thoughts of suicide. The risk of suicide is even higher for men over 50 who served our country. Guys like me. That's why support from friends and family makes such a big difference. Every day, your actions could help save a life. Together, we got this. Learn how you can help save a life at VeteransCrisisLine.net.
This is Ben Bueller Garcia, host of American Warrior Radio. If you're Medicare eligible and military connected, Rich Lewis and Medicare Mentors will guide you through setting up coverage and making sure you have the right options. You don't have to navigate the Medicare maze alone. Call Medicare Mentors now for your free consultation and free service. Call 719-886-3377. That's 719-886-3377. Medicare Mentors, personal guidance, no cost consultation, proud sponsors of American Warrior Radio, Saturdays at noon on KPPF, Colorado Springs.
We're building a radio station that is unique and different.
I like the news. I like being informed.
Stay with us at 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM KPPF. And hear the power of information.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Hey, listen, you've heard me rave about our new American Warrior Radio Challenge coins. We're thrilled to be partnering with Boss Custom Coins. I don't endorse products that I don't use. The process with Boss Custom Coins was easy. I selected from a variety of size, finish, and color options at BossCoins.com, submitted my artwork, and worked with their designers on finalizing our coins. Within 2 weeks, I had the beautiful coins in my pocket. Get yours at BossCoins.com, and if you'd like a discount, send me an email, bbg@americanwarriorradio.com. I'll introduce you to one of the bosses at Boss Custom Coins for a special listener discount. I love our new coins. Please visit our friends at BossCoins.com and tell them American Warrior Radio sent you. We're talking 9/11, folks. I'm joined in studio by Matt Rosenberg. Matt was an Army medic assigned to the Pentagon and was there on that fateful day, September 11th, 2001. Coming up, we'll also be joined by Jimmy Gagliano. Jimmy was an FBI agent who was also in Lower Manhattan that day. Matt, communicating the absolute horror of what you and your comrades at the Pentagon experienced that day, even though you and I, you know, before the break, we talked about the unlikelihood of a plane hitting the Pentagon. That was a Cessna or something of that sort, right? That plan did not consider a full-size commercial airplane, I'm guessing.
It did not. It was a commuter-type plane that would have been small enough if, from what I remember, it was that it crashed into the center courtyard mm-hmm. of the Pentagon and was strewn across the side of the center courtyard. But yes, it was originally envisioned to be a commuter plane.
So give us some perspective, Matt. For those of us who've never been there, Pentagon is 6-7 stories tall. I mean, it's a big building. Let's put it that way, right?
Yes. It's a big building, five rings. You can make it anywhere within the building within 5 minutes because of the way it cross, just because of the way it's built. It's huge in the sense that if you were to take all of the telephone wire that's in the Pentagon and tie it end to end, it would wrap around the planet four times.
Wow. Okay. So even a commercial airline I'm getting ahead of myself. That morning started for you like any other day. I assume you report to work, you check in, you get your kit, make sure your radio works, and you go about your business. When did you and your team first get the sense that something was amiss?
So on the morning of September 11th, we had just finished doing a procedure on a patient in the minor surgery clinic. And the acute care clinic is right across the hall from us. And they have two TVs in their clinic. And someone came in and told us that a plane had just hit the World Trade Center. So we went over to the other clinic and we're watching the TV, and you just saw what had happened. And we thought about how horrible that was. Then what seemed like not too long after that, somebody came into our clinic and said, "Hey, the World Trade Center just got hit." And we were like, "Yeah, we know, it's horrible." And they were like, "No, it got hit again." Mm-hmm. And it was at that moment that we saw it, because it was live pretty much mm-hmm. at that point, mm-hmm. That we all realized this wasn't an accident and we knew something was up.
The other thing I find intriguing about your story, Matt, is that when the plane first hit, you would think it'd be obvious that, holy cow, a plane just hit our building, but it wasn't that obvious, was it?
Not at all. The section of the Pentagon that got hit had recently been renovated and reinforced and strengthened primarily against bomb blast damage. And when you think of the plane in purely engineering standpoint, that's what it was. And so a lot of the concussion was trapped in that area and just channeled more towards the center courtyard. And as a result of that, as soon as the plane hit, the fire alarm went off.
Mm-hmm.
And all we knew was that the fire alarm was going off and two planes had hit the World Trade Center.
But maybe not much of a leap to add 2 + 2, or, I mean, easy for me to say I wasn't there.
So I didn't add 2 + 2 to the equation, because our responsibility during a fire drill or a fire is to evacuate our patients and get them out to the north parking lot, and then to take another one of our emergency medical teams and station it in the south parking lot. Just procedure. So when the alarm bell started going off, we just followed procedure. Procedure remained the same until a naval commander came into our clinic and walked up to me at the front desk and said, "Hey, I have a guy in the center courtyard who needs help." Well, I looked at Major Brown, our chief nurse, and Captain Glidewell, and they said, "Go check it out." So I told the commander to show me where it was, and the two of us kind of swam through this sea of people leaving the building. And it wasn't until I got to the center courtyard and I walked outside and I saw multiple patients and the big plume of black smoke coming out of the side of the Pentagon that I realized what happened. In that instant, I knew exactly what had happened. And I got on the radio and said, "Hey, this is Sergeant Rosenberg. I'm in the center courtyard. We need to initiate the mass cal plan now. I say again, we need medical assets to the center courtyard immediately."
So were you the first person to make the call, if you will, to the best of your knowledge? Or
I'm the first person that I know made it on our radios.
Okay.
But I can't say the same about the Defense Protective Service at the Pentagon or anyone else.
It's a family show, Matt, so we don't want to scare people too much. But again, folks need to hear this. The very first, as I understand it, the first or one of the first casualties that you saw was suffering from just horrific burns.
That's correct. He was pretty badly burned. His hair was still smoking. He was moving around frantically, trying to get air, and he was screaming. That was the first patient that we saw, and that kind of set the tone for what to expect for the rest of the day. It was at that point, by the time I got to him, that Captain Glidewell had also made it into the center courtyard, and I seem to remember her saying something to the extent of, "This is real, this is not a drill," into the radio. And between the two of us, we were able to take care of him. And then Captain Gladwell was the one who actually set up the first triage treatment area in the center courtyard.
When did you go from courtyard to actually entering the building? Because that's a whole nother level, I would guess.
Yes. Honestly, I can't give you a specific time. Time seemed to just move very quickly at that point. But what I can say is that it was after more medical assets started arriving in the center courtyard. And I had positioned myself near the exit where our patients seemed to be coming from. Well, the Air Force Surgeon General, Lieutenant General Carlton, came out. He grabbed me by the arm. He said, "I need you in here." And I looked at Captain Glidewell and I said, "Ma'am, can I go?" And she looked around and she looked at what the assets that were there and she said, "Yeah, but just be careful." And I will tell you that to this day, the way she looked at me was really haunting, because it was one of those "I don't expect to see you again" kind of looks. And as soon as she said I could go, I immediately ran over, grabbed an aid bag, grabbed a litter, and grabbed some other medical supplies and followed the general through part of the courtyard into the center corridor between two of the wings of the Pentagon. And that's where I first came upon the big blasted out hole in the wall that where people were trapped. And that's when the decision was made to go in and actually try to find more people.
And again, to clarify, you don't have a Gansner pack on. You don't have even a filter of any kind on your face. You basically just got your kit and you're running into fire and smoke.
Roger. So to do the most good, I wound up laying my pack outside of the hole. And we didn't have respirators or any of those other things. And so as I was making my way in to the hole the first time, they were bringing out a female casualty on the litter. So I stopped to do a medical assessment on her and then proceeded to go back inside to look for other people. And it was pretty bad in there. It was dark. It was smoky. There were things that were on fire. And it was really hard to breathe. It was so hard, in fact, that I had to come back outside. And when I came back outside, I had found where people had taken off their dress uniform tops and were taking off their t-shirts to soak them in what we thought was water to give us some sort of a respirator thing to go back in, some sort of wet rag over our face when we went back in. It wasn't until later that we determined that the mixture that I thought was water was a mixture of jet fuel and water.
And you're running into fire.
Roger.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Matthew Rosenberg. Matthew was at the Pentagon on 9/11. Coming up, we'll be joined with former FBI agent Jimmy Gagliano. You heard Matt refer to that look that was exchanged between he and his supervisor when he ran into the burning building. Jimmy Gagliano had a similar experience headed into Lower Manhattan. Stick around.
This is Ben Bueller Garcia, host of American Warrior Radio. If you're Medicare eligible and military connected, Rich Lewis and Medicare Mentors will guide you through setting up coverage and making sure you have the right options. You don't have to navigate the Medicare maze alone. Call Medicare Mentors now for your free consultation and free service. Call 719-886-3377. That's 719-886-3377. Medicare Mentors, personal guidance, no-cost consultation, proud sponsors of American Warrior Radio, Saturdays at noon on KPPF, Colorado Springs.
Didn't want to talk. She just sat with me. That was all I really needed.
We got back. One day he called me out of the blue, and it's comforting to know that I always can count on him to have my back.
She called me from time to time. I really didn't think I needed any help.
It took me from being really depressed to feeling like somebody cared to give me some hope. Just that one text.
Be there. Your call, your presence, your words, your support. Be there and help save a life. Learn more about preventing suicide at veteranscrisisline.net.
Opportunities present themselves every day. Opportunities that move us forward. Opportunities to serve our time in your community while continuing their full-time careers or education to help keep our nation safe at home and around the globe. Explore your opportunities in the Air Force Reserve.
We're standing at attention for our veterans, first responders, teachers, doctors, and nurses. We salute you for all you do.
I just want to thank you for doing what you're doing.
KPPF, the power of community.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. It's been 20 years since those horrific attacks. Our generation's Pearl Harbor, if you will. Everybody listening to this program, I'm guessing, can remember where they were on that fateful morning. Added to the conversation now, we're very honored to be joined by a somewhat regular guest on American Warrior Radio. Jimmy Gagliano is a former Army Ranger, member of the FBI hostage rescue team. Jimmy, it's interesting in talking to our first guest, Matt, he describes that moment when he was in the courtyard of the Pentagon and went into the burning building where the big hole was, and the glance that he exchanged with his supervisor, sort of a good luck, I don't know if I'll see you again. When you heard the news, you were actually headed to the dentist, you heard the news, you turned around, you headed back into Lower Manhattan, and Jimmy, you've told the story where you're crossing a bridge where there was a checkpoint, and there was an exchange that you had with a, I think it was NYPD officer. Was that kind of a similar vibe to what Matt described in the Pentagon?
Yeah, BBG, first of all, good to join you. It is hard to believe it's been 2 decades since that fateful day, and I think your comparison to December 7th, 1941, and the attack on Pearl Harbor, and certainly for my parents' generation, 1963 and the assassination of President Kennedy, I think 9/11 for folks of our generation, and really, I mean, you know, people of age that remember that day from as young as 5, 6, 7 years old. Yes, I think it is that same thing. And you made the comparison with the gentleman who was at the Pentagon, and I would say yes. I think there was a grim determination, a sense of resolve and resolution. I think after the second plane hit, when there was absolutely no doubt in anybody's mind that this was not some horrific accident, this wasn't a prop plane that happened to veer off course, or the pilot happened to have a heart attack and crashed into the World Trade Center. This was America under attack. And I think from that moment forward, gosh, we talk about numbers, and as poignant as 9/11 is for all of us, and I think it was 2 years ago that I was out in Tucson with you for the Tower Challenge, and we talked about this, and you know, I committed the numbers to memory. I mean, they're so visceral. I mean, you know, we lost, when you think about it, 2,974 Americans on that day. You know, 2,750 in New York, 184 in D.C. at the Pentagon, and 40 in a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And then when you think across the 20 years of war that America has been sending its sons and daughters to go and fight and take the fight to the terrorists so that we wouldn't have to deal with this here again on U.S. soil, 2,448 service members, Army, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard, folks that have gone into harm's way and have not come back. And most recently, the 13, I think there were 11 Marines, one Army soldier, and one Navy corpsman that were killed in that blast that ISIS-K perpetrated in Kabul as we were pulling our last folks out. Those numbers are just—they're stunning. And for those of us in New York, and we talked about this. I lost friends and colleagues, two FBI agents, both who were personal friends of mine, John O'Neill and Lenny Hatton. And then just think about the greatest loss of life in our nation's history for public servants, first responders, 403 in New York City alone, BBG. Mm-hmm. 343 from the fire department, 37 from the Port Authority Police Department, and 23 brave New York City police officers. I mean, that is just utterly staggering numbers. And my man, I guess if I can wrap this up by just saying that the one thing I hope we could return to, as horrific as 9/11 was, as horrific as September 11th of 2001 was, you remember as much as I do that visceral feeling of connectivity and unity and patriotism. You know, we weren't red America and blue America on September 12th. We weren't, you know, Catholics and Protestants on September 12th. We weren't Muslims or Jews. We weren't male or female. We weren't straight. We weren't white. We weren't black. We weren't whatever. We were one country. And brother, I just hope that we can find that sense of unity again. It seems we're so polarized now, and it took a tragedy like 9/11, 3,000 of our fellow countrymen losing their lives. But my gosh, on September 12th, we did find that resolve, and we did find that unity. And my friend, I hope we can find a way to get back to that place again someday.
Matt, your perspective to what Jimmy just said?
He's absolutely correct. We need the unity of September 12th now more than ever in our society. And I think that it is so very important to, one, not only pay respect to the fallen of that day, but also the estimated 40,000 other people who have some sort of ailment as a direct result of that day. This is the attack that keeps causing people to suffer, and that suffering hasn't gone away in 20 years. And I think that it is so very vital that we remember that.
Yeah, I've talked in shows before where, you know, it's completely evil, and it's almost like every time we lose another firefighter or first responder because of the cancer, it's almost like Bin Laden is coming back from the grave and striking them down. Jimmy, the challenge of radio, and you're a former broadcaster as well, is you can't communicate the smells. The visual images. You, as I understand it, Jimmy, you arrived in Lower Manhattan right as the second tower came down.
Well, I got to Manhattan just as the first one was coming down. I had been able to cross what was then called the Triborough Bridge, which for folks out in the Southwest, that's a bridge probably up on the it connects the Bronx, it connects Queens, and it connects Manhattan. And I was coming from upstate, and I came into Manhattan, and it's about an 8, 9, maybe 10 mile stretch to come down the expressway on the east side of Manhattan. There was not one car on the road except for me. I mean, they'd already shut down all ingress and egress points into Manhattan on that day. And as I got down to the Brooklyn Bridge, which is basically in the shadows of where the trade towers were, and got out of my car, the first tower came down. And, you know, life works in funny ways. God has a different plan, I guess. But I just had ACL reconstructive surgery on my knee. I wasn't as nimble or quick as I should have been as a guy in his early 30s at the time. And as I went hobbling down the road, that's when the first tower came down. And yeah, Ben, to put, you know, this is radio, obviously, but to try to paint a picture of that morning, that bright, clear blue sky that morning, not a cloud in the sky. Very few days in New York in September like that, a cloudless sky. Just how crisp it was. It was, I don't want to say it was unseasonably cool, but it was a cool morning. And then just my memories of the next months, not month singular, but months of, you know, the pile, what came to be known as the pile, or ground zero is widely recognized, of the two towers collapsed, you know, into a pile. And just think about the fires that continued to burn for weeks, not days, not hours, but for weeks, as the brave, you know, first responders attempted to rescue trapped members of the fire department and trapped civilians that were in there. And I think what's, you know, really, really critical, if I can paint a picture of this, is one of my most vivid memories and ones that still causes me to get choked up thinking about it, is watching people leap to their death from the towers. And they were faced with this just unfathomable choice, guys. They were faced with this choice between, do I stay here and jet fuel burns at 2,230 degrees Celsius, like 4,000 degrees Fahrenheit? Do I stay here in this incinerator, or do I take my chance jumping 1,000 feet to my death? And I think those are the images. And look, we all have images. We all watch some of the same things on TV over the years. I think everybody owns a piece of it, owns a piece of the memories and the honoring of the sacrifices and obviously the pain and tragedy. But yes, it's difficult not to think about this day and not to go back there and feel like it feels like it was just yesterday that we all experienced this horrific tragedy.
Jimmy, I know that you're now the mayor of, was it Cornwall on Hudson? Did I get that right?
Yes, sir. You did.
I hope eventually the mayor turns to congressman, turns to senator, turns to president, but that's just, we're not at a political talk show. So I appreciate you spending a few minutes with us here on your weekend. But just before we have to take the break, Jimmy, what would you like to see now? We've got 20 years looking back. What would you like to see 20 years looking forward?
You know, I think everything that we do in our country, I mean, our country's only been around for, you know, just shy of 250 years. So it's this great democratic experience. And I think what happens when things happen, we tend to over course correct. And you know, we talk about, you know, taking away civil liberties or taking away, you know, citizens' rights to privacy and things like that. And I think our natural reaction at that time on September 12th, 2001 was to do that. Now we're moving into that further realm, right, where cops are the enemy and where, you know, we don't want the state spying on us and we don't want to keep people in jail on bail anymore. I think we're going in the other direction. I think 20 years after 9/11, if we could just recognize that response in the moment or when we've forgotten the moment often goes to the extreme ends, and we've got to come back and settle on that sweet spot. We've got to find that place that we value those traditional American values, and at the same time, we keep our folks safe. And that's a tough job. I don't envy the folks that are still in the job and are doing it, but I think for the rest of us, we've got to recognize we've got to find that sweet spot going forward. And BBG, we've got to find that resolve and that unity and that universal patriotism we all shared on September 12th, 2001.
Outstanding. Compadre, muchas gracias.
De nada, señor. Take care, guys, and it was good to talk to you. Yeah, it's been a long time, but I always feel like we're kind of linked together, I think, all of us. And so I appreciate you having me on, Ben.
There's nothing like Spanish with a New York accent. Jimmy, stay safe.
Thank you, my friend. You as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back for more perspectives on 9/11 20 years ago with Matt Rosenberg. Stick around.
This is Ben Bueller Garcia, host of American Warrior Radio. If you're Medicare eligible and military connected, Rich Lewis and Medicare Mentors will guide you through setting up coverage and making sure you have the right options. You don't have to navigate the Medicare maze alone. Call Medicare Mentors now for your free consultation and free service. Call 719-886-3377. That's 719-886-3377. Medicare Mentors, personal guidance, no cost consultation, proud sponsors of American Warrior Radio, Saturdays at noon on KPPF, Colorado Springs.
It's been called shell shock, war neurosis, and battle fatigue. Today, we call it post-traumatic stress disorder, and it affects one out of every five warriors returning from battle in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Wounded Warrior Project offers comfort and support for warriors with PTSD and all other scars of war, whether those scars are visible or hidden. Find out how to help, because for warriors, the greatest casualty is being forgotten. Please visit WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Flag season is coming up. Like me, you want to fly the best flag to show your pride. That's why our house proudly flies a flag from Allegiance Flag Supply. American flags should be made in America, and Allegiance uses only the highest quality U.S. source materials sewn right here in the USA. Order your new flag for Memorial Day, Flag Day, and 4th of July today by visiting showallegiance.com. Use discount code AmericanWarrior at checkout for a 10% discount. The gold standard of flags for serious patriots. It's what we fly. ShowAllegiance.com.
National Guard and Reserve members need their employer's support, both on duty and in the workplace. But where can employers go when they need advice? Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, is here for you. We help businesses recruit, hire, and support service member employees. It's good for America and good for your workforce. Find your local ESGR representative at esgr.mil.
Hi, this is Craig Morgan. During this crisis, homeless veterans are alone, often sleeping on nothing more than a piece of cardboard. We need to act now. You have the power to move them from cardboard to headboard. Every dollar donated to Veterans Matters moves a homeless hero from the streets into their own home. To help, visit cardboardtoheadboard.org. They are not alone. They have you.
We are standing at attention for our veterans, first responders, teachers, doctors, and nurses. We salute you for all you do.
I just want to thank you for doing what you're doing.
KPPF, the power of community.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. You just heard from Jimmy Gagliano. He was an FBI agent in Lower Manhattan on that fateful day 20 years ago now, the attacks on September 11th. We're also talking in studio with Matt Rosenberg. Matt was a medic assigned to the Pentagon and experienced that horrible day there at the Pentagon. Matt, before the break, I kind of asked Jimmy his perspective going forward. In talking to you and hearing you address other groups about September 11th, you really emphasized this idea of passing the torch. And I think that's also for my generation, maybe for our generation, it's important to recognize that so many young people now that are coming of age and have over the last couple of years weren't born on 9/11. And yeah, I guess maybe to put it in context, you know, when those of us who remember when we first landed on the moon, watching it in that kind of flickering black and white television, you're probably too young to even remember that. But, you know, trying to communicate that to this generation where it's like going to the, you know, sending the shuttle up to the International Space Station is just like another day going down to the grocery store, and communicating to them how huge it was when we saw that happen back in our youth. Comparing that to 9/11 to this generation who wasn't born yet.
There's an added element to that, I think, that is so very interesting, and that's the amount of exposure that this current generation has to the violence in the world versus the amount of exposure that the pre-9/11 America had to violence in the world. When we talk about generations of children who grew up before 9/11, it's amazing to me that some of those who weren't there when it started were some of the last people out of Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a special kind of person in the wake of the last 20 years to grow up in the specter of 9/11 and decide that they want to go into any type of service towards their country or their community. It takes somebody very special to do that. And I firmly believe that it is about passing the torch. It's about changing. It's about basically taking what we've learned and handing it to other people because they're the ones that are going to do it. And when we talk about 9/11, it's very interesting to me because we have to continue to respect those who paid the ultimate sacrifice for what we've come to expect from people in that field. And what's amazing to me is that prior to September 11th, we didn't have that expectation as a society. We knew that firefighters put their lives on the line, but we never experienced it as a nation. We knew that law enforcement put their lives on the line, but we didn't experience that together as a nation. But after that, that's when we expected, that was the new standard for emergency services personnel. And this new generation of children growing into adults have grown up with that expectation. And they still decide to go through training and put themselves in harm's way. They still decide to go into a burning building, deal with all of those consequences, and then get up the next morning and do it again and again and again. September 11th, to me, is a very important day because not only do we respect the past, but the past has laid the groundwork for the future. And as we move into this new post-Afghanistan America and a post-Afghanistan world, we are going to need civically minded people to stand up as bearers, you know, honor bearers in our society. These are the people that we will look to for safety, for security. And these generations have embraced that. And I think that it is so very important to also pay homage to that as well.
You know, it's interesting. It made me think of the changes in technology and how that, looking through that lens of the current generation, I don't know this to be 100% accurate, but I'm guessing that 9/11 was one of the first truly worldwide tragedies that was live in our living rooms. I mean, most of us, in my case, for example, most of us were at that television when the second plane hit, when collectively we as a nation realized, like you did at the Pentagon eventually, this is not an accident. And I don't know how that impacts the psyche of these young people here, but I agree with you. They are certain, they know what they're taking on, and God bless them.
The only other incident that comes to mind in public consciousness is the explosion of the Challenger space shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
But even that can't, and while that was tragic, the amount of people that it directly impacted was not the same. Right. As September 11th.
And I think that's also, I mean, everybody should know this, but if they don't, I'll remind them. The attacks of 9/11 happened to take place on U.S. soil, but it really was an attack against the world. All the foreign nationals who were killed that day, in addition at the World Trade Center site, but then all the, and the families that then accepted and took on the burden of our nation's longest war, and all those allies who also joined us from around the globe, who recognize the evil that is terrorism. Matt, we've unfortunately a great guest, but as usually happens with a great guest, we run out of time. Just got a couple minutes left. What messages would you like to leave our listeners with?
9/11 is a day of remembrance, but it shouldn't end with 9/11. It shouldn't end on this day. People should remember that in the middle of the night when someone's trying to break into their house, it's law enforcement that's on their way. If you get into an accident, it's the fire department and rescue services that are on their way to come save you. It's the American military that we send overseas to fight evil on foreign shores. It's the healthcare workers that strive day in and day out to keep us alive, healthy, and well. And it's also the spouses of all those people who have to worry about what everybody is doing in between. We need to take the remembrance and honor of this day and carry that also onto the 12th, the 13th, the 14th, and so on. If you see people out, talk to them. Say hi. Ask our emergency service personnel how they're doing. Connect with them personally so that they can tell you their stories, because every single person has a story to tell.
Wonderful. Matt, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your thoughts with our American Warrior listeners today. Thank you, Jimmy Gagliano, for calling in all the way from New York. Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast and over 300 others can be found at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Please share these messages. We're on every major streaming. You can find us on iTunes, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Pandora, things I don't even know, we can't name. But find these messages and share. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, be safe. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.